week in all. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the October 11th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Let's tip off with women's professional basketball. The WNBA Finals resume later Wednesday night in Las Vegas, Nevada, where the defending champion Las Vegas Aces will host the New York Liberty in Game 2 of their Best of 5 championship series. Joining me now for some basketball insights is my friend and VOA colleague, Mukbil Yabaro. Sporty greetings, Mukbil.
Sporty greetings to you too, Sonny.
Mukbil, you might say Las Vegas came up aces in Game 1, beating New York 99-82. Mukbil, who are some of the key players for the Aces and the Liberty in this series?
All right, Sonny. So if we're going to start off with the Aces, I would have to say Asia Wilson. Potentially, she is at the top of the list for the finals MVP if the Aces are able to win it. We also have Chelsea Gray, who was the finals MVP for the Aces last year as well. Their point guard, she put up 20-9. Asia put up about 19-8. And they also have another very strong guard by the name of Kelsey Plum. She is leading the league, I believe, in three-pointers. Whether it's percentage, I believe three-point percentages or 3 points made. She is a baller as well. She put up 26-5. On the New York Liberty side, they have the season MVP, Breonna Stewart. She put up 21-9. And they also have Marine Johannes that put up 14-3.
The WNBA Finals, Mukbil, has attracted some sporty star power. Lakers superstar LeBron James and former NFL star quarterback Tom Brady, they were courtside in Vegas for Game 1. Mukbil, do you think their presence, in a way, is a symbol of the league's growth?
I definitely think it is. I'm starting to love how a lot of the guys, especially the bigger name athletes, are starting to support women's sports. You see a guy like LeBron James in basketball showcasing, you know, he's tweeting on X, wow, this is an amazing play that happened. It's exciting to see it. Even when they don't go, they're still watching and making sure that all their fans see that they are supporting the game, because the game is really at a high level, and it's unfortunate that people have not been able to see it, but I feel like it's just starting to come around, and a lot more of these athletes and a lot more American fans and worldwide fans are seeing that the basketball game and all sports across the board, women's sports in general, is really at a high level, and they're starting to get recognition now.
Mukbil, you mentioned Aja Wilson of the Aces and Breonna Stewart of the Liberty. Some say they're the two premier players in women's basketball today. They helped Team USA win the gold medal in Olympic women's basketball in Tokyo in 2021. Do you see any team at this point, Mukbil, dethroning the American women at the Paris Olympics next year?
I think the women's game is similar to where the men's game was a few years back, right? Whereas the U.S. team is just that much more dominant, even if you do have players from other nationalities. Like, I believe there's a couple of Australian big-name stars. Cambridge, I believe she plays.
Liz Cambridge.
She plays for the Australian side. So you have a few players here and there that are there, but the problem is there isn't a consistent amount of players that are playing at a high level in the WNBA that can go and kind of go to their national side and compete. Whereas we've seen on the FIBA side, the Canadian team had about, what, eight guys that play in the NBA on a high level, so they were able to compete there. You know, you got the guys on the Serbian side, you know, that maybe weren't even all NBA guys. I believe they didn't have a single NBA guy on there, but the EuroLeague now has developed so far that it is, you know, some may say, you know, very comparable to NBA. They play a different style, stylistically, but chemistry-wise and everything, the guys, they figured it out. So I think the women's game is not there yet where they can compete with the WNBA stars. And we're also seeing that the WNBA women, the higher level, top caliber players are still playing. Whereas for the men on the FIBA, we saw that it wasn't really your A side that was going out there. Hence why LeBron and the gang wanted to come back and make sure that for Paris, it's some of the heavy hitters that are going to be there for the Olympics.
The Las Vegas Aces, they're the defending WNBA champions. They were here in Washington just a few months ago. They were saluted at the White House, and the Vice President, Kamala Harris, she praised the Aces, Mukbil, for their fight for pay equity.
You know that in our country, women still make only about 84 cents for every dollar that a man makes. And that the gap is wider in professional sports. But you are fighting quite successfully to close that gap.
You use that phrase, not there yet. WNBA players, they're not there yet in terms of equal pay with their NBA counterparts. Do you see their salaries rising maybe in the next few years?
I think, as we all know, right, it really comes from the eyes and the viewership, right? That generates the ads, that generates the company's interest to be able to put money behind it. So the more eyes that are on the game, the more excitement will be behind it. But in the end, it'll be fueling the salaries of our beloved WNBA stars. Unfortunately, now at the moment, you might have a handful of them that are making six figures. Outside of that, some of them, once the season is over, have to go overseas and really make a chunk of their money overseas. So we don't want to see our stars having to go elsewhere. We've seen a situation with Brittany Griner being in Russia. Only reason why she was there was because she wasn't getting paid enough over here. If she was getting the salary that we all know that they do deserve, then I believe she would have been here stateside. So it'll be interesting to see in the coming years the excitement behind it. And hopefully also, I think the schedule that they have the women's game on is kind of in a weird time.
Right.
That, you know, a lot of the kids are out of school. Parents are, you know, taking their kids on vacation. They're going on Euro trips. You know,
that's right.
You know, you got to make sure if we can somehow shift it a little bit where everyone is kind of at home, it could get the viewers up as well.
The WNBA finals are taking place as the NBA continues with preseason games. And Mukbil, first off, let me thank you for piloting the Sunny Side of Sports ship recently for a couple weeks. I did listen to one of your shows, Mukbil, where you mentioned how Cameroonian star Joel Embiid, the reigning NBA Most Valuable Player, he has said he intends to play for Team USA at next year's Paris Olympics. I think he has like triple citizenship, Cameroon, France, and the USA. What's your reaction?
I think I'm sure the Cameroonian side and the French side both will be disappointed to not have a juggernaut of a player like Joel Embiid, especially if he's able to stay healthy throughout the season, right? I know Paris, for better reasons, for lack of reasoning, knows that, you know, they would love to have Joel Embiid having the Olympics be in their country. And then Cameroon for, of course, you know, he is a Cameroonian young man, you know, so they would love to have him as well. But I think it just kind of boils down to a lot of these stars, if they do become naturalized citizens of America, love to play on the American team because of the simple fact that you're going up against these guys on a continual basis. And
right.
if you have an opportunity to
right.
play alongside them, it almost becomes like a glorified all-star game where you can play with, you know, the best of the best, and, you know, kind of also show, you know, this is at the end of the day, the country that he said that his son is born, his son is American, you know, he's a naturalized American, you know, he lives here, he loves the country as well. So what better way than to give back by making sure that the gold comes back to the U.S.?
Well, I know the NBA, as they get ready for another season, Mukbil, some players have switched jerseys, so to speak. There have been some trades. Which ones have caught your eye?
I would say that Drew Holiday making his way to the Celtics from the Blazers because he was initially a part of the Damian Lillard trade. So let's backtrack a little bit. So the Bucks land Lillard in a three-team trade. Damian Lillard from the Portland Trailblazers goes to the Bucks. The Trailblazers receive DeAndre Ayton from the Suns, Tumani Kamara from the Suns, Drew Holiday, and then a bunch of first-round and second-round picks. The Suns receive from the Bucks Grayson Allen, and then Keon Johnson from the Portland Trailblazers, Nasir Little, and Nurkic from the Blazers as well. So now you have so many different things. You know, the Suns now have Nurkic, who is a scoring center, to now be pieced along another trade of Bradley Beal coming to the Suns earlier in the summer. You got Devin Booker there. You have Kevin Durant there. That team is a problem.
Wow.
You know,
they've got some firepower.
Firepower indeed. The Celtics lost Marcus Smart, the defensive player of the year, or one of the defensive players of the year in the past. But then you gain another defensive player of the year in Drew Holiday that arguably might be a better scorer than Marcus Smart. They also picked up Porzingis earlier on the summer as well. So they've had a very good summer. I would say the Rockets picked up Dylan Brooks from Memphis. The Thunder picked up Patty Mills. And lastly, but definitely not least, Chris Paul was traded to the Warriors. And the Wizards ended up getting Patrick Baldwin Jr. and Jordan Poole. So
I really like
the pool. Now they say, you know, the young duo in Washington, Jordan Poole and Kyle Kuzma. You know what they calling them now? Pool party in the jacuzzi.
I love it.
So I think it's excitement all around, man. Excitement all. The only team that really, you know, kind of like is saddened about everything is probably the Miami Heat, because that was Damian Lillard's initial wanting to be his landing spot, and the Blazers and the Heat were unable to get it done. But I know Milwaukee is excited to have Damian Lillard for sure.
Finally, Muckbill, you mentioned Chris Paul going to the Warriors. I think maybe if that deal had been made, say, 10 years ago, it'd be fun to watch CP3 with Steph Curry in the backcourt. But kind of if those two guys are out on the court together, those are some of the older guards in the league.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But interestingly enough, Coach Steve Kerr has said that he's going to try to create a lineup where he might have somebody like a Draymond Green play a big. He usually plays that death lineup that he calls. He just outruns and outguns folks. He might have Draymond at the five, play Chris Paul at the one, Steph at the two. He'll play Clay at the three, and maybe Wig at the four, Andrew Wiggins. So it's interesting to say the least. I want to see how it looks, though. You know, on paper it looks cool, but you know, Chris Paul's one of those guards that's just so ball dominant that sometimes it kind of takes away from the fluidity of the game. And you know, the Golden State Warriors play a very fast paced game, so I'm gonna be interested to see what he does. But he's a point guard that is arguably gonna go down as top 10 all time, I think, if I'm being, you know, gracious. Maybe top 15
yeah,
for some,
that.
You know, so I think it's fair.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it'll be nice to just see him and Steph play. They have had this little bit of a rivalry for years. So for them to be on the same team, it'll be interesting.
Talking Hoops with Muckbill Yabberow. Thank you, my man.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
World football's governing body, FIFA, recently announced that Spain, Portugal, and Morocco will be the host countries for the 2030 Men's World Cup. It's the latest victory in a sweet period of international success for Moroccan football. Morocco's national women's team, the Atlas Lionesses, made their Women's World Cup debut this year in Australia and reached the round of 16. And Morocco's national men's team, the Atlas Lions, became the first African team in history to reach the semifinals at last year's Men's World Cup in Qatar. For reaction to Morocco being selected as one of the World Cup host countries in 2030, Iron Mike Gambonye spoke with the chief football writer at ACLSports.com Fisayo Dairo.
I think it's a fantastic piece of news and a very great and noble idea that for the first time ever, the FIFA Men's World Cup will be co-hosted by two different continents. And most especially for this edition, which is going to be used as a way of marking the centennial celebrations of the FIFA World Cup, the matches will be even played in up to three continents. This is what the football game is all about. This is what sports is all about. It's a sport that preaches togetherness, that preaches unity, that preaches oneness among different people, different races, and across miles and oceans. So I've been in Morocco, in Africa, 20 years after Africa first hosted the tournament in 2010 with South Africa, joining forces with the Iberian neighbors, Morocco and Spain and Portugal, I beg your pardon. And of course, only the sea separates Morocco with Spain. It's so, so fantastic. And me, myself as an African, I'm so glad and so proud of it, even with the fact that it's been muted, that perhaps Morocco might host the final match of that competition. This is a very great idea, and it will go a long way in further uniting the world that is being separated every day by wars, by fights, and all. So I've been a lot of, as much as 40 countries converging in up to six countries to play the FIFA Men's World Cup across three continents. This is very great.
Morocco is the second African country to host the FIFA World Cup after South Africa bid in 2010. What does this mean for the continent?
I believe this means that regardless of the perception that the continent has in the eye of the world, the continent still has enormous abilities, enormous resources, and fantastic capabilities of pulling off stuff like this. Yes, like South Africa, they were magnificent hosts in 2010. Morocco, right now, are the hub of infrastructure in the African continent. They are going to be hosting the Africa Cup of Nations in 2025. That's 5 years before the World Cup in 2010, which means they are still going to have a large chunk of those facilities ready. The infrastructure has always been there, the train services, the flight services. So definitely it will pass the message to the rest of the world that Africa is quite more than what they think of us. It's not just about a home of sicknesses and diseases. It's not just about a home of lack of innovation or lack of progressive thinking. We have everything in the continent, and these are some of the things that we will be showcasing through Morocco, who have done a fantastic job in the last decade of hosting a number of competitions, you know, from the African Nation Championship to the Under-23 Championship to the Under-20 to the Under-17. From 2013 to now, Morocco have hosted all these things. And like I mentioned earlier, they will host the AFCON in the next 2 years. So these are some of the things that Africa really possessed beyond all the prejudice that the outside world used to view us.
Fisayo, do you think FIFA's decision to make Morocco co-host of the 2030 World Cup will motivate other African countries to develop football infrastructure in the continent?
Absolutely, I do think so. Like I mentioned earlier, Morocco has become a hub of infrastructural development in Africa. They've been hosting lots of competitions, the Women's Cup of Nations as well. You know, so they always have these facilities ready. Their clubs participating in African club competitions have always done well with their facilities. So this is a message to the rest of Africa that are still lagging behind, that you are missing the opportunity to allow your citizenry live very well with this infrastructure. And of course, you're also missing the opportunity to attract tourists to your country, to attract foreign exchange to your country, to boost your economy more. And I'm sure it's a message that will be continually preached among other African countries, especially those in the sub-Saharan part of Africa, where these facilities are lacking the most. Morocco have taken the lead always in Africa in terms of exhibiting their infrastructure, exhibiting their facilities. And if South Africa too can boast of that and Egypt, then the rest should be able to work on that. It is never a loss. You will always gain back in terms of who and what comes to your country, in terms of tourism, in terms of the economical development, and in terms of even exposing the talents that are born out of your country. So this, the Moroccan situation will definitely serve as a motivation to the rest of the African continent to ensure that they make developing of sporting and non-sporting infrastructure facilities something that they take at utmost priority.
That's Fisayo Dairo, the chief football writer at ACLSports.com. And Fisayo spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Port Harcourt, Nigeria.
Sporty greetings. This is Fisayo Dairo, chief football writer at ACLSports.com. And you are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Around the clock, the Voice of America keeps you in touch with the latest news. Tune in at the top of every hour, every day of the week for the 5-minute VOA newscast. We bring you reports from our correspondents and interviews with newsmakers from across the world. Give us 5 minutes and we'll give you the world. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
In pro boxing, Cameroonian fighter Francis Ngannou arrived in Saudi Arabia Tuesday ahead of his October 28th bout against WBC heavyweight champion Tyson Fury. The 37-year-old Ngannou, a former mixed martial arts champion, received a bouquet of flowers on arrival at the airport in Riyadh. He also posed with fans holding a Cameroon flag and expressed his excitement about getting the chance to fight Fury.
It's such an amazing opportunity to be participating in the global event, international event, such as Riyadh Season 2023. So I can express my gratitude for the opportunity that has been given to us by His Excellency, Mr. Turki Alshir. So I'm very excited to be part of it, and, you know, it's just an honor.
This will be Ngannou's first official boxing match. Although Fury's world titles will not be on the line, the bout against Ngannou will count on his record. Ngannou is predicting a true rumble in Riyadh.
Oh, no, my promise for this fight is simple. We are going for war. We are going to give them the best opportunity, the best experience as long as fight. You know, we are taking everything in the ring and going out the ring with nothing.
Some sad boxing news out of South Africa. Unbeaten South African bantamweight Ronald King Malindi has died at the age of 29 after more than 1 month in the hospital. Malindi worked as a taxi driver, and on September 5th, he was shot in the head and chest in Johannesburg's Westbury Township. Boxing South Africa said in a statement, and I quote, "It is with deep sadness that we mourn the loss of Ronald King Malindi, a true South African bantamweight champion with an unblemished record of 19 professional fights without a single loss. Our hearts are heavy as we bid farewell to this remarkable boxer." South Africa's national cricket team continues its World Cup campaign Thursday with a match against arch-rival Australia in northern India. The South Africans are coming off a big win against Sri Lanka in their opening match. Joining us now from Durban with more details is Myron Naika. Sporty greetings, Myron!
Sporty greetings, Sonny. A storied history embodies this great fixture. South Africa and Australia have produced blockbuster cricket over the years and will renew their rivalry when they meet for a fifth time at an ODI World Cup. The 50,000-capacity Ekana Cricket Stadium in Lucknow is the venue for the fixture. The Aussies have won 3 out of their 4 previous matches against South Africa, including 2 semi-finals. Australian captain Pat Cummins believes Thursday's clash has the makings of another epic.
Yeah, it's another team that I feel like we play quite a lot against, which creates a bit of rivalry. I also always find with South Africa, I know we always match up quite similarly. Like, they've always got some fast bowlers and some batters that take the game on, maybe a leg spinner. So it always feels like it's a clash of two very similar teams. Yeah, no doubt will be another great game tomorrow.
Having lost their opener against India, Australia will no doubt be looking for a big performance against South Africa. South Africa's batting coach, JP Duminy, a former Protea himself, understands the approach and tactics of the Aussies.
Well, having had personal experiences against them when their back's against the wall, they're going to come out firing. Knowing their personality, it doesn't take them away from their style of play. They're going to come harder. So what is our response to that? Our response to that is really trying to stay in our bubble of process. And I know I'm sounding like a stuck record here, but that's certainly been our language. It's not necessarily fighting fire with fire. It is, what is the identity of the South African team? We're a resilient country. We stick together in tough times. So whatever is going to be thrown at us, we got to look each other in the eye and say, I'm going to do this for my mate. I'm going to do it for the guy on the other side and understand the how.
The two teams met in a 5-match series prior to the World Cup, with South Africa coming from behind to win 3-2. They carried that form into their World Cup opener against Sri Lanka, beating them by a massive 102 runs. Duminy says things are starting to click for South Africa, both on and off the field.
We're finally in a space, I believe, where the thinking is in the right direction and the tactics are really good. And, you know, that bodes us well going forward, because when we're operating in that space, that comes down to a preparation, a skill execution, which is, as a cricketer, if you're operating in that space predominantly, I think we're heading in the right direction.
Staying in the moment and not looking too far ahead is important for this Proteas team, according to experienced batsman Quinton de Kock. South Africa recorded 300s in their win over Sri Lanka, a first at the World Cup. De Kock, who was among the centurions, said it was good and well to succeed on the day, but consistency is what they're chasing.
Yeah, I think we're doing really well as a batting unit. We've worked really hard in our game the last couple of years. It's only one game into the World Cup, so it's hard to say how we're really going. Even though we batted really well our last couple of games, but it hasn't been over a course of years. It's only been a course over a month or a couple of months. I think in order for us to be one of the best, we need to still be a bit more consistent, especially in tight games like World Cups.
De Kock understands playing conditions in India well, having played in their franchise competition, the Indian Premier League, for the past decade. Despite playing for the local team, Lucknow Super Giants, not even he could be drawn towards a comment on what to expect from the pitch.
I don't know what wicket we're going to get. I was here during the IPL, and the wickets, we got different varieties of wicket and play one certain way. So it could come out and it could be a seam-friendly wicket opposed to a spin-friendly wicket. So, I'm pretty sure the thought of process of bringing in the second spinner is in, but we'll see tomorrow.
The stage is set for another blockbuster clash between these age-old rivals. The good news for Australia is that they have experienced campaigner Marcus Stoinis back from injury. The Proteas are still mulling over the possibility of playing two spinners, which will see Tabra Shamsi join Keshav Maharaj. For the Sunny Side of Sport, I'm Myron Naika in Durban, South Africa.
Thanks, Myron! And that wraps up the October 11th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in.
I get it.
VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.